Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So the price of oil is back up around $75 a barrel. The Daily News today quotes analysts who say $100 oil is a real possibility by the end of the year. They say that would probably mean $5 a gallon gasoline. And into the complicated stew of who wins and who loses from the way energy is developed comes big news from Bolivia this week. The newly elected leftist president, Evo Morales, says he is nationalizing the country's oil and gas fields. That's not a surprise. In fact, it was a campaign promise designed to appeal to the country's poor. Bolivia has the second largest natural gas reserves in Latin America after Venezuela. But the announcement deepens the debate over the new left in Latin America. Venezuela, under Hugo Chavez, has done something similar with its oil industry. So what does this all mean to countries like the U.S. and Brazil that consume so much energy? And is it the best way to help the Latin American poor? Maybe there are even ramifications for immigration to the United States, our policy obsession of the moment. So with me now are two guests, Carol Graham, professor of public policy at the University of Maryland. She's also a senior fellow in economic studies at the Brookings Institute. And Ben Cole, author of a new book called Impasse in Bolivia, Neoliberal Hegemony and Popular Resistance, published by Zed Books. He's also a geography and urban studies professor at Temple University, currently visiting at Cornell. So Carol Graham, Ben Cole, welcome to WNYC. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Professor Cole, I'll start with you. And just to give our listeners some background, what does nationalizing the oil and gas fields in Bolivia mean? Who owns them now, and what will actually change?
What will actually change is the control of oil and gas production. Oil production is really not very important in Bolivia. We're talking mostly about natural gas. The companies like Repsol and Petrobras, the Brazilian state oil company, currently control the reserves, but they will have to turn over the reserves at the wellhead to the national company, Bolivian company, for distribution.
What does turn over mean? Is the government just confiscating what is currently private property?
No, the government is not confiscating what is private property, but instead what they are doing is that they will control the prices, they will control the profits, they will, in an attempt to gain a larger share of revenues for the Bolivian state, for the Bolivian people. Whereas before, the government was received only 18% of total revenues in addition to some other taxes. What they're going to do now is reverse the situation and allow oil companies to retain 18% of the value of the product at the wellhead.
And so before we get into the who wins, who loses question with both of you, Professor Cole, should we see this as part of a trend in the region? How similar is this, for example, to what President Chavez is doing with the oil industry in Venezuela?
I think that we could see it as part of a trend. There have been demands not just from Venezuela, but from Ecuador, from other parts of the region that are realizing the importance not just of oil, but of natural resources, and recognizing the fact that for a long time the revenues from natural resources have gone to benefit not the people of the countries, but transnational corporations.
So, Carol Graham, do you accept that analysis to start out, that the profits from these resources have gone to benefit transnational corporations and not enough to the people of the countries?
I guess I would have a slightly different take, which is, you know, in the short term, it's always a nice idea in theory to redistribute more of the proceeds of any kind of investment to poor people. In the long term, though, particularly if you are a country like Bolivia that is not otherwise very attractive to foreign investors, I think it can really backfire. It's going against what has been a 10-year trend of trying to establish more market-oriented economies, stable institutions, secure property rights, and a hospitable environment for foreign investors. And I think it's not clear that the gains for the poor in the long run will really be there, in no small part because you're also talking about a country with very weak governance structures, very weak institutions, and the jury is still out on in terms of finding a a developing country that is dependent on oil or gas or another mineral resource that has used that in an efficient and equitable way rather than as a source for a lot of corruption and a lot of rent-seeking on the part of elites. So, in theory it sounds good. In practice, I think the probabilities that this will really result in a sustainable pro-growth, pro-redistribution policy that favors the poor in Bolivia is very low.
Professor Cole, you want to respond?
There's a certain thing that I think that I do agree in a fair amount with Professor Graham. Certainly, Bolivia's economy, whether it nationalizes oil and gas or not, is in abysmal shape. And it is going certainly against this 10-year trend towards privatization, towards attracting foreign investors. However, and certainly the governance structures of the state are weak. However, the foreign investors have really not done little, and their primary responsibility is to foreign shareholders. And they have done very little, and they make very few promises or no promises of any recognition of responsibility towards the Bolivian people. Now, one of the interesting things is, and here I absolutely agree, that natural resource companies are sites of corruption for many countries. There's a big change in Bolivia. For the first time in 500 years, we've got an end of this form of Andean apartheid. An indigenous leader, for the first time in Bolivian history, is ruling the country, and those of us who are optimistic about some of the possibility really do see that there is a possibility that a new administration with a real commitment not to the type of crony and politics that we've traditionally seen in places like Bolivia, and certainly we've seen other countries like Nigeria or other oil-producing states, but there is the possibility, I believe, that a very different type of administration will be able to address some of these issues.
We can take phone calls on this question of Bolivia nationalizing its oil and gas fields, as Venezuela has done with its oil industry. We heard about Ecuador also as part of this trend. There are implications here for the United States. There are implications for the rest of the Americas. There are implications for the whole idea of what kind of economics work, especially for poor people around Latin America, also with implications for the United States. My guests are Ben Cole, author of a new book called Impasse in Bolivia, Neoliberal Hegemony and Popular Resistance, and Carol Graham from the Brookings Institution. And we can take your phone calls at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Carol Graham, do you want to just respond to what Professor Cole is saying, and follow up on what you said before, I'm curious if you think it's impossible to have both a kind of growth-oriented economy and reasonable distribution to the poor in a country where there is such a split between rich and poor, like Bolivia and much of Latin America.
Okay, let me make 2 points. I'll answer your broader and bigger question second, but mm-hmm. the first point is I would like to, again, in theory, I'd like to believe that what Professor Cole is saying is possible. In practice, I'm extremely skeptical. Certainly, you'd have a country which is, as he notes, fragmented ethnically, as are many of the Andean countries, and that's created governance problems and sort of institutional cohesion problems for centuries, or at least for the last century. On the other hand, I think that everything about this government so far has been a lot about confronting, sort of blaming the outside rather than looking in and trying to build institutions. So I really am a lot more skeptical about their capacity to pull together a coherent government structure, much less a coherent macroeconomic management plan for an economy which is, as Professor Cole says, really a mess. It's been completely mismanaged during all of these government transitions since the fall of the Sánchez Elizalde government. I think it's quite important to note that I think we'd probably both agree that a lot could and needs to be done to get the economy back on track and to do so in a way that benefits the poor. My big criticism or big question is, why would anybody, having seen the history of nationalized industries in the past in Latin America, believe that nationalizing industries today would achieve that objective? If you'll note, in Venezuela, since Chavez has been in power and nationalizing oil industry, poverty has increased quite markedly. I think that's quite an important note.
Well, let me jump in on that. Let me jump in on that for a second, Professor Cole. Do you agree with that? That's been the effect of the Chavez regime. I know that one thing that I've been hearing as a criticism by those who don't like his nationalization of the oil industry is that, yeah, this may be working for the poor now while oil prices are so high, but when they come back down someday, then they're really going to be stuck without outside investment. But that critique includes that it's working for them now. So which do you think is right there?
Well, I think that there's a little bit of truth in both. I think that we need to also to think about what our time horizon is and what's going on over the long run. I'm not an expert on Venezuela and would have a hard time mm-hmm. being able to predict what we can expect. But what I do think that is important to note is whether or not the rate of poverty has increased. If we're also worried about this issue of democracy and governance, one of the things that a government really has to do is maintain legitimacy among its people. And in Venezuela, whether we as Americans agree with what Chavez is doing, he has enormous popular support. In Bolivia as well, for the first time in recent history, you have a president who won a first-round ballot with a clear majority of the population. So in part of this issue, and I absolutely agree with Professor Graham, that governance is key and building a national state and national identity is key. That what one of the things that I think that Morales is really going to be able to do is going to be able to draw upon the issues of indigenous identity to be able to incorporate the majority of the population into this national vision, into national economic life.
We have to take a break in a minute, and then we'll take phone calls for both of you. But answer her question about the history of any country nationalizing its major industries. Has it ever worked?
Sure. If you look at Northern Europe, the issue isn't nationalization. The issue, I agree with Professor Graham, has to do with issues of governance and a state that is able to regulate both mm-hmm. itself and mm-hmm. or the private sector.
And Professor Graham, before we break in half a minute, the argument on the other side is the neoliberal or free market IMF kind of approach for Latin America was seen as such a failure in recent years.
I think there are two things that need to be unbundled in terms of the IMF sort of pro-market approach. One is getting your macroeconomic house in order, fiscal stability. That's an important and necessary condition for reducing poverty. Bolivia at the moment is not there. It's not a sufficient condition for reducing poverty. But to say it's failed, it's a question of where has it failed and why has it failed. Look at Chile. Chile's reduced poverty from over 40% in the late 80s, early 90s, to a 17% rate. The poverty rate in Venezuela is up since Chavez has been in power.
We'll continue in a minute with both our guests and your calls. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, as we talk about the implications for Latin America and El Norte of Bolivia announcing that it is nationalizing its oil and gas fields. My guests are Ben Cole from Temple University, author of Impasse in Bolivia, Neoliberal Hegemony and Popular Resistance, just published by Zed Books, and Carol Graham, professor of public policy and senior fellow in economic studies at the Brookings Institute. She teaches public policy at the University of Maryland. And let's take a phone call. Our lines are packed. Juan in Jersey City, you're on WNYC. Good morning, Juan.
Yes, good morning. How are you today?
Okay, thanks.
Good. Well, first of all, I think Latin America is waking up now, and we have to cut a little bit the umbilical cord from United States related with a lot of economical situations that is happening. Like Chavez, he's trying to independ himself with Castro and other countries around. Right now, Colombia is one of the full supporters for United States and Latin America.
But what does that mean, cutting the umbilical cord in economic terms? Does it necessarily mean government owning industry? Does it, you know, it doesn't mean cutting yourself off from the market. Certainly Venezuela wants to sell its oil to the United States.
Well, there's other countries interested in Venezuelan oil. There's a lot of Chinese, Japanese, and other European countries.
You think it shouldn't sell its oil to the huge market on its doorstep?
Yeah, of course. There's a growing interest in developing countries in Europe. And so it's a free market now. That's what United States wants, free world.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't let it do it? Why, you know, if you, as a matter of fact, third world countries or poor countries like Latin America, so to speak, what are you going to buy from a poor country? You know, the pesos are not that strong, so the dollar is going to be always on top of the peso. So,
Juan, thank you very much. I'm going to get some other folks on. Dana in Montclair, you're on WNYC. Hello, Dana.
Hi, hello, thank you. I was just wanted to clarify that what in practice has private industry actually done for Bolivia? You're talking about how poor it is and how weak its government is, so I don't see that the private route has actually benefited its economy, its government, its schools. I think private industry has actually helped contribute to the corruption of previous governments.
Professor Graham, you want to comment on that?
I think there's been good and bad experiences with private industry. If you look at the time, not this past Sánchez de Lozada government, but the one before, when there was a major effort to what they called capitalize some of the state-run industries, and they had foreign investors actually put major investments into the country, and then also distributed the shares of some of those privatized public enterprises into actual shares for Bolivian citizens on a wide scale. That, in my view, was an innovative way to get foreign private investment working in favor of the country. There certainly have been less positive histories of foreign investment in Bolivia, but I'd like to see an example of a country that has developed and grown without any private investment and without a private sector. I mean, what's the model to follow? Cuba?
Dana, do you want to follow up?
Well, I feel we're really wed to this idea of capitalism and that it is an ideal that truthfully is as artificial as communism, and that there needs to be some balance between the two. And I think that if Bolivia sees the balance as taking more control over the resources that it owns and figures out a way to benefit from the profits itself, then that's what it needs to do. I don't think that pure corporation involvement necessarily has proved any better than the reverse.
One more time, Professor Graham.
I'm all for creative strategies to get the private sector working for the poor, investing in the poor, and in terms of, you know, creative government strategies to attract the right kinds of private investment. In other words, you know, private investment that generates more jobs, that all sorts of things. But I think you just can't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Particularly in Latin America, there's a long history of nationalizing public
enterprises in the namesake of the poor and having the results be disastrous both at the overall general macroeconomic level and having no results that were positive for the poor. The reason I mentioned the capitalization program is I thought it was a tremendously creative program to get the private sector working for the poor and having some of the proceeds of private investment going directly to shares, so creating shareholders among the poor. And that was an experiment that was actually done in Bolivia. The tragic thing is that given Bolivia's political instability and flip-flopping, it was basically cut off and reversed as soon as there was a change of government. I think there's been a tremendous amount of learning in the past couple decades that, you know, over-regulation of the private sector backfires, and at the same time that just, you know, unfettered freewheeling capitalism without efficient government institutions and regulatory systems and some form of redistributive taxation when and if appropriate are essential to making, you know, the most of growth and making it pro-poor. But I don't think there's any one model out there. We seem to have a pretty good sense, though, that the extremes on either end tend to have a very poor track record.
This is 93.9 and AM 820 WNYC and WNYC.org as we talk about Bolivia's decision to nationalize its oil and gas fields and the implications for their country, our country, other countries, with Carol Graham from the University of Maryland and the Brookings Institution, and Ben Cole from Temple University, Cornell University, and author of Impasse in Bolivia, Neoliberal Hegemony and Popular Resistance, and Cyrus in Manhattan. You're an oil industry analyst, is that right?
Correct.
Hi, thanks for calling.
Nice to hear. People are missing the point with what's going on here. It has nothing to do with helping the poor. It's just for it's political rhetoric. It's about gaining control of the resources of the country and the government so they can assert more power. We're seeing this not just in countries in Latin America. We're seeing this in Russia with Vladimir Putin trying to centralize and destroy the private sector and with Rosneft and Yukos. And we're seeing the same thing in Latin America. Now, nationalization of oil companies is not anything new. There was a period of that YDF, Bolivian Central Gas, and also PDVSA and Venezuela, they were completely nationalized. There were no foreign investment. And what happened was there was no development. There was no money coming in, so people came in with their hat in hand to the United States and to Spain and Brazil, saying, please come in and give us technology, and we'll give you half of the you guys make out of the oil. And now that they have all the investment, they have everything, they're stealing it back. It's ridiculous. And so people are not going to invest in the country, and then no one's going to profit.
So, Professor Cole, what about that context, the context of other countries, the context of Bolivian history, and the charge that this is about government power, not about helping the poor?
That's a common charge. Let's start with the last one first. This is about government power, not helping the poor. And if we need to differentiate and distinguish between different types of governments. In this particular case, Evo Morales, I think, really does represent the majority of the population in a way that no other president in Bolivian history has. Because Bolivia is a weak state, certainly it's really important, and I agree with Professor Graham that it's important that the state have the ability to regulate the market, but there's no reason to think that a weak state will be like Bolivia will be able to regulate a corporation like Exxon or Repsol. And it seems to me the chances of some of the revenues going to help the majority of the Bolivian population are much greater in the situation where the Bolivian state actually can control the purse strings as opposed to try to regulate a private firm. If I can very quickly also respond to Professor Graham's comments about capitalization, within the 5 years of turning the firms from state control to private control, the railroads, the airlines went bankrupt. Approximately 50% of share value in those government firms was lost. And the reasons for that is very complicated. While it was a very creative proposed solution, I would certainly say it was not an unqualified success.
The Well, I wonder how either of you think this nationalization by Bolivia will affect the United States, if at all. Professor Cole?
I don't think it'll have any effect on the United States. The resources that were nationalized are primary natural gas. Natural gas is not the same as oil. It doesn't travel. It's expensive to ship. It doesn't travel very. It's easier to consume locally. It'll have a much bigger impact in Argentina, Brazil, and potentially Chile, which is currently very strapped for energy.
Well, on Brazil, the New York Times yesterday quoted even the leftist president of Brazil, which is such a big importer of natural gas from Bolivia, President Da Silva, says, you know, President Silva, a leftist and former union leader who publicly hailed Mr. Morales' rise to power. Let's see, I'm losing the rest of this. Oh, Mr. Da Silva is to meet with José Gabriele de Azevedo, chief executive of Petrobras, on Tuesday, along with senior officials from Brazil's Ministry of Mines and Energy. The point is that Lula is worried about the implications of this for the affordability of energy in Brazil.
And he should be. I mean, I would be worried, too, if I were Lula. And it's too early to really tell how it will play out. And this is a case where the interests of a leftist in one country do not cross national borders. We're really talking about differences in national interests at this point.
Let's take another call. Jose in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hello, Jose.
Hello, Brian. Well, I just wanted to say one thing. I'm very glad to hear that both your guests agree that government regulation is necessary to make these resources work for their owners. The only one thing that you can help notice, excuse me, let me clear my throat, is that this privatization option or the whatever you want to call it, neoliberal, they've had their long run. Like in some countries it may be newer, maybe since the Clinton times. In some countries, it has been there forever, and it's brought nothing else but poverty. So, I mean, you have to understand these countries are looking for solutions. There are some models, yes, in the capitalist model, like Roosevelt did here in the 50s, which include both regulation and privatization, you know, which might work, but the current model is not working for a lot of people. And on the Chile so-called miracle, I mean, you have to remember that when Pinochet took over the economy actually tanked. It didn't really pick up until he started enacting some of the things that he killed agenda for, including the nationalization of copper. So it's not that black and white as they always try to portray that, without private investment, you know, you're going to be, you know, poor. It's like, well, we're poor now and we have private investment. So how are you selling the private investment to me, you know?
Professor Graham, what about his take on the history of Chile, not really working under Pinochet until he brought back some of the regulation that he originally trashed?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Chile is a very good example of a place where completely, you know, unregulated sort of free market economics without any, you know, any concerns about, you know, exchange rate overvaluation, capital flows, completely unregulated capital flows before the regulatory structure was prepared to handle them, all kinds of other problems, a lot of insider trading in terms of the way some of the privatizations were done in the first round in Chile. So they learned a very hard lesson. And basically, one could almost, just to be brief, describe it as redid the reforms in the early 80s and then got a really big bang for their buck in terms of economic growth and in terms of poverty reduction. So I think, again, it's my point is that it's don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. In other words, markets are essential and necessary to growth and to poverty reduction. It does not mean that they are sufficient on their own. And I think what we found the most successful recipe, which is hard to pull off in some countries with weak institutions like Bolivia, is market-oriented growth with decent regulatory structures and with good investments on the social equity front, long-term investments in health and education and other sorts of social policies that can generate long-term poverty reduction.
Jose, thank you for your call. And Professor Cole, are the two of you really coming from different places but winding up in the same place with the mix of markets and regulation that you both seem to be calling for?
I'm probably more skeptical of the ability of a weak state to regulate. I think actually it's probably better to be an inefficient producer than an inefficient regulator, as we saw it with in the post-Soviet Union transition and in many of the transition economies in Eastern Europe.
Which means that even though you're skeptical about the neoliberal hegemony, as the subtitle of your book calls it, the free market hegemony, you're also skeptical about this nationalization by Bolivia and whether it's going to work for its people?
I think that it's not just simply a national issue, I think, but it's also an issue of how it fits within the international context. And I think that having a neighbor like Brazil, a neighbor like Argentina, who are going to be pretty upset at your national demand for a greater share of resource rents, is going to put Bolivia in a very difficult position.
Do either of you think, and we're almost out of time, that Professor Graham, in the long run, when we talk about development around Latin America, certainly when we talk about development in Mexico, that this relates to the immigration debate? We saw protests in this country, obviously, on Monday, also in Mexico on Monday. Some critics of the pro-immigrant movement say, look, they should be demonstrating against corruption in Mexico and Bolivia and places like that. So they're economies can develop, and they don't have to leave their homes to get decent jobs.
Let me maybe turn that around a bit. I think as long as you have the kinds of income disparities that you have between the U.S. and the countries south of the border, particularly Mexico, you're never going to resolve the immigration debate. And that sort of being anti-immigration and closing the borders, in my view, is not the way to do it. But in terms of the relevance to the debates in Latin America, I think they're very indirectly linked, but there is one direct link. And I think there is a reason that Chavez and Morales and now Humala in Peru have some appeal with taking an overtly anti-U.S. stance. Is here is a situation where the U.S. has failed so miserably in following up on precisely the policies that it needed to deliver on to help make this free market model work, and that was taking an active interest on free trade agreements, and every one of them has taken much longer than necessary. The overall free trade agreement of the Americas is sort of a long song dream. There's been absolutely no attention to the region at all at precisely the time that the first stage of reforms needed to shift towards a longer-term one with better institutions, better trade relations, and the U.S. has a lot of blame to bear there.
Interesting place to end. Carol Graham from the Brookings Institution and University of Maryland, Ben Cole, author of Impasse in Bolivia, thank you both very much for coming on.
Sure thing.
Thank you.
Coming up in a minute, historic change coming next week to New Jersey. Stay tuned.